Amen.
Welcome to the November 2nd edition of the In the Now show. This is your host, Slip Mode, along with the rest of the group.
SVR.
This is Bob. Meme in the Machine.
All right. So how's everyone doing this this fine Halloween week?
Yeah, I'm still feeling a little creepy.
Just semi-dysfunctional.
Semi-dysfunctional. All right, well, we have a lot of interesting stories and news to talk about this episode. And I'm going to jump right into it. Usually I start out with the most scientific discoveries and then end up moving into general news. And, of course, we head to our SCO section. So I'm kind of trying to stay away from that. So we'll head off with this. All right. Well, an Israeli startup has developed a processor that uses optics instead of silicon, enabling it to compute at the speed of light, the company said. I actually have two articles on this. It's an optical processor. Basically, it's a digital signal processor with an optical accelerator attached to it that enables it to perform functions at very high speeds. The processor performs 8 trillion operations per second, equivalent to a supercomputer and 1,000 times faster than standard processors, with 256 lasers performing computations at light speed. It is geared towards such applications as high-resolution radar, electronic warfare, luggage screening at airports, video compression, and weather forecasting, and cellular base stations. So if they use that meme, they'll no longer break open your hard drive to see if it's a terrorist piece of equipment.
You forgot one thing that's used for the new version of Solitaire.
The new version of Solitaire. That's right.
I always thought they used all these great supercomputers for, like nuclear weapons testing.
Oh, no,
I guess they're going to test them on real people now.
They used 10,000 American soldiers for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, stand there, buddy, and we'll call you when we're done.
Don't ask any questions.
But there's another article, too, that didn't mention the Israeli company, or that was from Israel, and actually mentioned the company's name, so I just want to put that in there. Lenslet LTD, and let's see, they showcased this at the Milcom exhibition in Boston, Massachusetts, and they did that this month, I believe. And, yeah, basically, it's just a processor that they're trying to move towards doing Obviously, you can see where it's trying to be marketed here. Defense, Homeland Security, multimedia, all sorts of stuff like that. So definitely going to see more along the lines of using light instead of silicon in the future. I think it's going to be a while off before we're really in that direction, but it's begun. All right. Another interesting bit of information out there about the advanced computing techniques and the state of technology is that a Japan team reports quantum computing breakthrough. Basically, we've talked a lot about quantum computing in the past, and people have put together basic quantum computers. The team has built a controlled knot, basically a CNOT, because it's quantum. A CNOT gate, a fundamental building block for quantum computing, in the same way that a NAND gate is for classic computing. The team reported the breakthrough, and it's headed by Sai Jiaosen, and jointly funded by NEC Corp and Japan's Institute of Physical and Chemical Research. Sai said that his team has successfully demonstrated a CNOT gate in a 2-qubit quantum bit state solid-state device. The CNOT gate is one of the two gates used with qubit computers, or quantum computers, that are the basic building blocks required for a quantum computer. The other, a 1-qubit rotation gate, this demonstrated by Sai's team in 1999. Now we have both... Now that we have demonstrated both types, Sai says that one of his goals is to combine them to create something called a universal gate, which is a basic unit of quantum computer. Another goal is to do some quantum algorithms based on those, based on that hardware.
Wow. I just still think it's rather interesting that using quantum, you know, those quantum particles and still making them machines, but they're still actually having to do, like, a physical action.
Yeah. Well, from my understanding, they use atoms. And basically, since they operate in what I've read as 32 different dimensions, and basically when something is applied upon that atom, it reacts in a way, in a quantum way, which is, you know, multiple dimensions, which can actually solve many problems within one swoop. Of doing, you know, a quantum calculation versus a single calculation. It's done on multiple levels, so it's therefore more intelligent and processes data a lot faster.
Yeah, I still get a kick out of that. It's just still a mechanical action.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun that we're playing, making these, like, you know, subatomic machines to do our computing for us.
Yeah, I just wanted to play Quake. No, I'm just kidding.
Play solid
5,000 FPS.
Quantum Quake. That's right. You know, I don't know. The more real games look, it's cool and all, but kind of sidetracking here. But
more like watching crappy TV.
Yeah, you know, it's got to be. It's got to definitely have a lot of quality to it. To
you know, why don't we just put electrodes into our occipital lobe, and then we just have to plug into our cranium, and we can just be completely immersed.
With all the VR they promised us, you know, you push a game controller and it plays the same crappy film loop over and over again.
Yeah, I know. I want to be watching TV in my head.
You die the same way every time. That's what I always say.
You know, in the 70s, they told us that they would be flying by the next millennium, having flying cars. So, you know
they're here? Flying cars?
Yes. Muller.com, MOLLER.com. Well, it's a prototype, but it's a damn good one.
There's also another one from some inventor. I saw it on Invent This, a television show on Tech TV. It's $25,000, and they're selling them.
$25,000
for a personal helicopter. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, because there's been lots of prototypes for like little kind of hovering
and all you
like airplane helicopter.
All
things.
You need to drive it is a driver's license.
Yes.
Huh. Yeah,
well,
this one.
No,
it's
maybe a sports license, a
no,
sport
it's classified
pilot license.
As in Arizona, there was a new law. You can, I forget what the classification was.
So the sport pilot license.
No, you with a regular driver's license, you can drive any plane that's under a certain class.
Yeah,
I forget what class.
It's called a sport pilot's license, and that's one of the requirements. You still have to go through some testing, though.
No, but you can drive it with your regular driver's license. You have to know how to fly it. But
yeah, and how to operate, so you have to have classes on it. So you can't just go, like, drop in put it, you know, get in there with.
Well, me and Bob are, we're rebels. We're just going to take our driver's license and go.
I read this in a magazine somewhere.
But I'm very proud of you. Did it actually have the Inquirer written on the front?
No, it did not, actually.
Okay. The Globe?
No.
Right. Oh, come on. Hey, the if you go to Mueller.com, actually, you see he's got a four-seater model. He's got a single-seater model. And we just kind of moved on to this, but hey, why not? Talking about it. The one that he has that's a four-seater, they actually use the Wanko motors. They have four of them, and they have... it's jet propulsion, but it's called a turbojet, which means it's actually a propeller within a jet. So it's not using, like, jet fuel or jet, you know, it's not a flame coming out the back. It actually has speeds up to 300 miles per hour, and I think it goes up to 8,000 feet in the sky.
Oh, wow. That'd be fun.
And it's actually about the size, probably about the size of an SUV.
So I could store it in my garage.
You could.
And just kind of, like, wheel it out in the garage and see, you know, bye-bye all that rush hour traffic, as long as I can land on the roof of my office building.
You can actually park it in your own parking space.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's...
Don't let anybody steal it. That's why I got to put OnStar on it.
Low jack for my airplane.
Yeah. Well, you spotted your car. It's about 5,000 feet right now.
Well, that's good, because I only had a quarter tank of gas.
Yeah. You know, actually, it gets 28 miles to the gallon, too.
Really?
That plane.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Okay. You know, speaking of traffic, I guess there's a new device. I know people have reverse engineered this device and created their own, just, you know, tech geek hobbyists that have made it on their own. But it's the device that fire truck and policemen use to change the lights green. That's right. They have... usually, you'll find on top of the lights, the street lights, you'll see on some of them, you'll see something that looks like a little fog light. Like if you've seen the fog lights for your car, just a little round, you know, clear looking piece that's up on there. Usually, they have two of them up there sometimes. And this will basically send out a signal. I think it's an infrared signal. It sends out an infrared signal, I believe, or it's a pulse of light. And there is actually a maker. And this article didn't list it, but there's a maker that actually has this for $300, and you just stick it on your dashboard, and you turn the lights green.
Oh, yeah. Or you could also probably rig your remote control to do it as well.
What do you mean?
If it's infrared, just boost the power on it. And you can sit there and try to go power on your remote control.
I think it operates on a different frequency. Yeah. But nonetheless...
It was an idea anyway.
Yeah, at least we're thinking about it. All right. Yeah, I'd rather have that than a radar detector. I mean, those things usually work when you get spotted anyways.
Yeah. Well, because then, reverse it and change the light red, like, right afterwards, so the cop behind you that's chasing you has to slow down and turn on his light.
Yeah.
Just give you just that extra second of time that you might be able to get away before the helicopter comes.
And also, I don't know if people have ever wondered how much data there is in the world. Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, it's pretty much infinite.
Well, according to a study, they say that 5 exabytes were created just during the year 2002.
And an exabyte is what?
You know, I didn't do my homework on that.
Oh, really?
But I can tell you that...
nothing.
But I can tell you it breaks out to this. You can equate it to this. About every person in the world would have created 800 megabytes per person.
I've done that easily.
Yeah.
How much of that was spam?
I think that was 1 exabyte. Yeah, it's probably 1 exabyte worth of data.
Just 1 8.
But, yeah, that's a lot. Let's see. An exabyte or 1 million terabytes. That's what it is. It's 1 million terabytes.
Wow. So 5 million terabytes?
5 million terabytes.
The Library of Congress is only 7 terabytes.
And three of the exabytes were porn, I believe is what the article said. I believe that's what it said.
Well, at least they got the priority straight.
Yeah. At least we've got our at least we're using technology for its real purpose,
well,
which
that
is to serve up porn for everybody.
Well,
that
killer
is,
app.
That is
porn,
the driving force of the internet and all that. It's the reason why we...
It really is?
Yeah, why we got, you know, have cable and...
Porn
and
games and movies.
Hey, I thought
it all comes down to porn.
I thought it had to do with me being able to, like, you know, check my local library from my bedroom. I thought that was what its main game was.
For downloading MP3s.
MP3s.
Yeah, porn.
And MP3s.
Doing music and watching porn.
And AVIs. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I see it. I get it.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah. Well, we are still an animal.
I mean, I forget who it was, but there was a famous person that said that basically we would use, I don't know if it was Albert Einstein, we basically use all of man's largest technological feats will be used for his own pleasure.
Well, that's really...
What else would we use it for?
Well, I mean, like, you know, they would use it for surfing porn or something like that. It wouldn't be something as, like, bringing the worlds together, taking the internet and communicating and
who cares about that?
Well, you know what? If there was, like, an all-world, like, porn day, that might actually use everybody.
Porn day.
Yeah, it's kind of like John and Yoko spending the day in bed. If everybody jerked off, you know, there would be no war.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a whole, like,
hey, maybe you're right.
Peace, sure. Love, and, you know, flower kind of thing.
Well,
peace, love, Linux.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. That's, I guess I don't know what my comments are on that, but it's pretty,
Well, it's just an interesting observation.
Very interesting observation. All right. Well, here we're going to get into, here's an article that, goes along our lines of, our evil things that go along in the world. Gary Stallman, director of a small K-8 charter school in Buffalo, New York, is an RFID believer. While privacy advocates fret that the embedded microchips will be used to track people superstitiously, Stillman said he believes that RFID tags will make his inner-city schools safer and more efficient. His one-year enterprise charter school started using RFID last month to record the time of students arriving in the morning. In the next month, he plans to use the RFID to track library loans, disciplinary actions, cafeteria purchases, and visits to the nurse's office. Eventually, he'd like to expand the system to track students' punctuality, or lack thereof, for every class, and to verify the time they get on and off the school bus.
I heard
sounds
they're
like
parents.
Prison to me.
Who cares?
Yeah. Who cares about most of that
What does
stuff?
It have to do with education?
Well, there's some schools that have lunch tickets where the parents can actually monitor what credits are put on someone's card so they can control what the food the kid eats and that sort of thing.
The school spent $25,000 on the system, and $3 per ID tag for the students.
Oh, but they also have webcams in all the locker rooms.
For what? The Catholic priests? So,
not there, but some other school in Austin. I heard they did that.
Huh.
Yeah, I would definitely some problems
you
with that.
Access it online.
There's some good privacy issues there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's none of their business, really. The only thing that's their business is trying to educate the students, and tracking any of that has nothing to do with educating students.
I think they differ there, preparing them for the police state. You know, you got to try to be a good slave.
Well, now, if they actually, like, monitored how, like, the exact seconds that they were in class for, they might actually get a couple of more days off because they're only required to spend so many days in the classroom.
That's not going to happen.
See, but now if that was what they were doing and actually, like, trying to cut costs, yeah, maybe in 50, 75 years, they might actually save the money that they put into the system.
Well, let me be sure I understand this. So they spy on you in the workplace. Aren't they just preparing these kids for entrance into
They're
the
They're preparing
workplace?
Them to get used to this system. Now, it's just, you know, I don't care what they spend. There's no benefit whatsoever. The abusal of the information and passing that on, you know, it's just a structure that's built, and then once it's built, people will build upon it, and then maybe it'll link, you know, their system to that system, and then all of a sudden everyone's getting information about people. I mean, it's already been done, you know, in many other places, and now it's just filtering down to the kids, you know. It's already on your dog for their RFID tags. It's
And they're always saying that there's no money for programs in school, but there's lots of money for intrusive technology.
I don't think we could, you know, get the right gym equipment that we need this year, but we got an RFID tracker, and, you know, we're going to find out where your kids are where at.
Yeah, and here's his cracked helmet to go play football in, little Johnny.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry, no
Have
school,
fun.
You know, no math, you know, I mean,
no
music, no art, you know, no
about
extracurricular.
That,
you
what
know.
About that, you know, article last week I think we talked about the, or maybe it was two shows ago, the one about the parents that were suing for the wireless network being around their homes.
Oh, yeah, because of the non-ionizing radiation might affect them.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they can find, you know, the RFID tags going to, I don't know.
Well, it would, yeah, kind of, it would alter their you know, electromagnetic frequency of their body. And it might, after most of their lifespan, might affect something.
Yeah, but there's still, you know, mercury in the vaccines and all these other things, you know.
Well, and President Bush just said we can have more, like, is it arsenic in our water?
Yeah, oh,
that's,
you can grow all kinds of stuff in the water. You just can't put anything in your body voluntarily.
You know, actually, I think they did a test of the city water versus the bottled water. And it's at the bottled area, the bottled water, not the bottled area. The bottled water is the same quality as the city water just before it travels through all your pipes. It's the exact same quality.
Yeah, but you get a pretty package.
you get a pretty package, and you have those little squirt tubes. You know, the top, you twist it, the sports water bottle. So, I don't know, you know.
I think that might be talking about, like, Dasani water.
No. City water.
That's funny.
So, I mean, where do you think they get the water?
Well, maybe city rhymes with this other word we're not supposed to say.
No. Where does the city get their water? Where does the people from the water companies get their water?
Well, I heard
they're not trucking it down from the Colorado mountains, I'll tell you that.
Well, they found Prozac in a water supply somewhere like a week ago, I heard. Some lake was loaded with Prozac, and they find...
Was loaded with Prozac?
I'm not kidding you. They found high levels of the active chemical in Prozac in lake water, and they've been finding high levels of oral contraceptives in fish. I mean, these fish swim around in the water that's getting pumped back into the lakes.
That's weird.
Everything
I think it's
you
the government
away,
doing.
You know, makes
they're trying
it
to control us.
Think of anything you've ever flushed down your toilet, just think at some point or another that finds its way back into Mother
Earth. That would actually have to be going back up the system, because where does the water come from the lakes? Most of the time, you know, cities and all that are really downriver, you know, closer to the ocean, and then what refills lakes is rainwater and snow runoff.
Sometimes they're actually mid-river, and your city's down-river, getting their mid-river stuff.
Yeah. That would usually be a reservoir and not a lake. But anyway, I digress.
Well, either way, we're saying that the water, doesn't matter where it comes from, definitely the more we keep producing, the more we are just polluting.
They should call it H2O+, you know, because so much other stuff.
Yeah, sell it as something that you're getting something beneficial out of it. H2O+. You may grow a third thumb, you know. You might...
Hey, that would be... You'd be a third, you know, more functional.
A third more functional.
What I always wondered, though, is they put fluoride in the water, but last time I checked, I've never seen anybody swishing with the water except when they brush their teeth. You know, they usually, like, swallow the water.
You know what? There's no proof that fluoride in the water actually does anything to the water. I actually heard a whole talk show about this. It doesn't prove that it does anything for you, and I think they had some things that it may prove to be not as healthy. You know, it may be healthy to not even have it in the water.
Yeah, it's a neurotoxin.
So the thing is that I believe it's just one of those things where a company's like, hey, you know, we've got access to this fluoride. We could probably make a lot of it. We should sell, you know, this water company on the fact that, hey, they could put it in their water supply, and we'll make some money. We'll give them a little bit of money. They'll tell the public, and the public's going to be happy when they get their crappy water because it's got fluoride in it. So
actually,
they're going to feel a little bit better
exactly
about it.
That's exactly the truth.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
It's a byproduct of metallurgy and silver, aluminum manufacturing. I think it's sodium fluoride. It's the variant that is actually in our water supply as opposed to what the dentist uses, you know, for treatment.
Yeah, it's all about, you know, commerce and sale. It's, you know, I don't know if I discussed this. I told this to so many people. When they have tickets, like if you get a ticket for speeding or anything like that, everything that you do in this world, they seem to found some way to, they meaning, you know, public people, companies, governments, whatever, found ways to charge you or pull that enjoyment that you have out of life and make it some sort of thing that's commerce. And somebody said, you know, I had to pay for the speeding ticket. And I was like, look, man, don't worry about it. He said, what do you mean? I was like, don't feel bad about paying for a speeding ticket. So what do you mean? I said, look, everything else you enjoy in this life, do you pay for it, right? Anything else you want to do, right? You know, unless you go to a national park, but you do have to pay the gas to get there and buy the car. But, you know, if you're paying for a speeding ticket, you're just paying for your right to speed. You know, they don't particularly care. I mean, if you go and murder somebody, you may go to jail, you may not. But if you go, you're just paying for your right to murder, you know.
That's right. It's just the price.
Very expensive price.
Need for speed.
Yeah. See, some people are better at, you know, getting bargain deals, you know, where they murder somebody and get away with it, so they get a bargain. But, you know, all it is paying for something for a pleasure in life. And some of the pleasures are prefabricated where they're not really doing anything for you, like fluoride in the water.
But they sell you a bill of goods that it is.
Yeah.
They're going to have a junk food tax, I was hearing. You know, somebody was saying they were going to start, like, you know, first they're going to tax, you know, cigarettes and all that, and then junk food was the next thing.
Yeah, see, it's your fault if you have a problem with eating food. You know, it's not the problem that the maker's out there. Sometimes, actually, I'll take that back. Sometimes it's not your fault because sometimes it's genetic, okay?
Well, a whole family.
Which really does a whole number on the whole idea of this country and freedom of the dumb, the land of free, that you have to pay for absolutely everything. So you even have to pay for the sin against yourself.
Actually, free meant, you know, I think it has to do with big business is free.
I think this country has changed to the fact, and it doesn't mean everybody abuses this, but I think that, you know, the idea of freedom and everything sounds really cool, right? It makes you happy. I mean, don't you want the entire country to be happy? That's really what's going to make things move around here. If you're happy, you're going to work, you're going to produce, you're going to buy, you're going to do everything, and that generates a lot of money, and that's good for society, you know, as far as keeping commerce going, stuff like that. So I think a lot of times people have taken the idea of freedom and sold that to you and said, look, you have this freedom, so now you can do this, and they keep pumping out that idea. But sometimes people don't realize we've lost a lot of our freedoms. We've lost a lot of freedoms, and we're not able to do some of the things that we used to be able to do. In certain situations, not in daily activities all the time, but I mean, some of these laws that are out there, you know, the Patriot Act, stuff like that, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, copyrights in general for certain things, you know, how being, you know, monitored in systems and RFID tags and social security numbers and all this crap, you know, there's a lot of times where that information is used against you and black boxes in your car and all that crap. So your freedoms have been taken away in a lot of places. And
that's your anonymity. It's your anonymity.
Freedom,
Independence or if it's it's not in the Constitution. I think it's the Declaration of Independence, but it says specifically that your right to anonymity is utmost. You know, you have a right to anonymity. It's in there. It's said that way.
We're not supposed to be subject to, you know, searches and
invasions
of privacy.
Unless you actually have to have probable cause, which could be anything nowadays, or anything for the past, you know, years or whatever. Yeah, Bob, you're a terrorist, you know?
Yeah, but didn't you know a broken tail light means that you're, you know, a murderer?
Exactly. Yeah, even though I've got another one that works just fine.
We've just kind of spoken out against the whole system as is, so... Aren't we being disruptive and anormal and, wouldn't that be pretty much a terrorist?
We're anarchists.
By today's standards.
Well, if I start going around and blowing up buildings, then you can call me a terrorist, which I'm not going to do at all. But, you know, we're free thinkers, and that's what it's all about.
You're a paper terrorist.
Yeah.
I'm a liberal thinker.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Some of the liberals are a little too liberal, and some of the conservatives are a little too conservative. I think it's a balanced line. See, I hate the fact that people sit there and divide themselves in these groups because there's Republicans that are, you know, act like Democrats and vice versa.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're all just meaningless labels now, except for all that really designates.
It's a football team.
Is who, where their money comes from. That's about it.
But it's a game, though. You just nailed it when you talk about these two sides, like what the Merovingian said when he says, choice is an illusion created by those who have power. And that's the truth, is everybody's like Democrat or Republican. Meanwhile, it's nothing but managed conflict. You know, it's the Hegelian dialectic.
They're the two sides of the same coin. We need some other pocket change.
Yeah. You know, I believe in the American system as far as, you know, the way it was formed in the beginning, but... you know, that's a lot of things we talked about in the show, is how people have taken advantage of that system and, you know, sold you into all these things. Like, we've been sold into all these things for our own safety, you know, but a lot of it, as we spoke before, the Patriot Act has been used against people that are not terrorists. which is not what his original intent was. And, you know, in the end, you know, a lot of this stuff is just, you know, some of these laws and crap that they keep inventing and stuff is basically to keep lawyers busy, make them lots of money. They're the only people that benefit when things go bad in the world because, you know, other than war, you know, where the people are producing weapons of destruction. But
well, actually, even then, because then they have to do, like, legislation and other things and prosecution of those war criminals.
Yeah, so, you know, it's all about keeping themselves busy. And they do things, too, in a court case that wouldn't have to involve other lawyers, you know, where they could have done it a more streamlined route where they could just do the work themselves. But why not when you can pull the rest of your buddies on board? And it may not be like buddies that you know about. It may just be other lawyers, period. And you would hope in the future that they would do things like that because it just, in general, develops more work for lawyers. So it's just, you know, yeah, it's all about money. I mean, it's where it all comes down to. And it'll get to a point to where people keep forgetting about what the hell's really going on. And as far as, you know, what really matters in life. And, you know, once they start getting subjected to these stringent guidelines of how, you know, they're supposed to look and act and have a history of and their behavior and stuff like that as a defined person in society, and all of a sudden they step out of that line and all of a sudden they're kicked back and pushed down to the lower classes, then they're going to start being a little pissed off, saying like, hey, you know, why'd you do that to me? And then they're going to start realizing some of these laws and these rules and the crap that they make, you know, is very affecting a lot of other people that they didn't even realize. See, the people that make these laws, they don't necessarily, they don't have any problem making them because they don't have to fall underneath them, they don't think. And maybe they don't, you know, if I do this, I'm never going to get prosecuted for
it. Well, they also write
it,
so they also know all the loopholes and how to not be subjugated by it.
Yeah, so it's just a big old game. It just keeps people going.
For the
and
rest
happy.
Of us.
Yeah, you know, so that's the thing, is that, that's why, I mean, shoot, you know, start your own In the Now show, start your own mailing list. You know, there's lots of people out there that do this kind of stuff, and,
start your own currency.
Currency, yeah, but, you know.
Funny money.
You know, wouldn't that be really interesting? Like, we also, you know, like, no, I've got, you know, the VR dollar, and, it's worth how much work VR can do in a week. You know, that's... I think that'd
be
really fun.
It should
be
a value unit. I agree.
Exactly.
I think if we had a universal form of exchange rather than this monetary system that doesn't work.
Well, it does.
It's
just kind of funny.
Gold.
Because it's all about it. It's just a commodity like everything else.
Well, see,
it's
not
just a piece of paper.
See, I think everyone's going to start moving to the democratic system, and you know, some people may hang on, make communism work for them, like China. But, you know, I think we're all going to be doing this stuff and playing these games, and we're really going to start moving in on our personal rights more and more and more and more because they're going to run out of things to write about. And then after that happens, hopefully, we'll have enough technology to go to another planet or get the hell out of here. Because
that's why I'm going to run for office, you know, probably the presidency in probably 2010, and put a sundown clause on every law.
2010?
Yeah.
Are you going to do, like, an impeachment in the middle of the 2008 presidency?
Or whatever, you know. Or I'll just actually have a little coup.
You could run for president and have a platform like, in the future, you will be micromanaged. Everything will be done for you.
Yeah, you'll enjoy it.
That would be wrong.
But
that would be really bad.
I think that's the thing. I think that's the savior. You know, once we get to that point, it's like, where can we get the heck out of here, you know? And there's going to be some guys that are... you know, have a lot of money and be able to pull us to other places. Of course, they'll promise us happy things over there as well. It's all about give or take, you know, finding out where it's bad and where it's not so bad. Because it's really hard to find a place where it's good.
Well, it's when they get caught so in their own web, maybe they'll...
yeah.
Except in cyberspace, where you can create your own little realm in some cities.
Yeah, you know, cyberspace is a pretty interesting place. All right. Well, that was a good... Wasn't anything I've had planned, but that was very good. I don't think that was a rant. Because, you know, rants are usually just a very opinionated system.
You carefully measured your thought.
I think it was a very articulated statement.
A manifesto.
Put it that way. All right. Well, we know that there's another system out there for the Internet, and it's called IPv6. It's, you know, the newest version of the Internet protocol. Definitely offers a lot of new features, but it's really hard to adopt it because, hey, everybody's an IPv4, and it's hard enough to get people to upgrade anything, let alone something that affects everybody. The Department of Defense begins a 6-month program to check out IPv6 interoperability tests. For the next 6 months, the U.S. Department of Defense will operate the largest multi-vendor IPv6 network to date. Today, the North American IPv6 Task Force announced that the network dubbed the Moon V6 project, has been deployed to evaluate next-generation internet technology to support network-centric military operations. The DoD said it will migrate its existing global information grid network based on University of Hampshire, based at the University of Network of New Hampshire, to the new IPv6 network by 2008. Future combat and defense systems needs network ubiquity, mobility, and security that current internet protocol IPv4 cannot provide. The Moon Project is collaborating among industry engineers and several DoD organizations, and is designed to examine the interoperability of IPv6 software and services under real-world conditions. So I know that Asian countries have made the big move to try to move over to IPv6, and I think, you know, we've got some interest to get there, too. All right. Well, if some people have been paying attention to news about Google, they are thinking about doing an IPO, initial public offering, and that's where you offer your stock up to the public for investors. Google, the high-flying Silicon Valley web search engine company, recently began holding meetings with bankers and preparing for a highly anticipated initial public offering, as it is still engaged in meetings of another kind, exploring a partnership or even a merger with Microsoft. And I have a follow-up article to this. According to the company, executives and others briefed on the discussions, Microsoft, despite are desperate to capture a slice of the popular ad-generating search business, approached Google within the last two months to discuss options, including the possibility of a takeover. While the overture appears to have gained little traction, Google indicated that it preferred the initial offering route. The executive said it demonstrates an enormous importance that Google represents a both competitive threat to Microsoft and to Silicon Valley's latest new hope for a financial boom. So I remember a long time ago reading about them, Microsoft saying that MSN will, outdo Google. We don't need to, you don't have to worry about them and the wars for search engine advertisements and portals and things like that.
Yeah, the same. And
obviously, they failed, so now they're trying to buy their way out of that.
Yeah, they're definitely trying to buy into every technology that somebody else creates. Except they will come out with Windows Longhorn and amaze you off your feet. And then Google rebuffs Microsoft. Internet search leader Google has rejected a takeover bid for Microsoft in favor of selling its shares directly to the public. Probably because they're a little bit smarter than that. They and other senior executives have in recent weeks been interviewing investment banks with a view to take the company public to a valuation of $15 billion to $25 billion U.S. dollars. So that would be very amazing. That would be some good stock to buy right there, I'll tell you that. And a lot of people know that, and they're going to be buying that stock the minute it hits the market. All right. And this is something I've been reading more about. You'll see in the whole struggle between Microsoft and their recognition of Linux and even Mac OS X coming into the market and bringing these new technologies of and systems based on open source that people just seem to like for some odd reason. And a lot of talk from Microsoft about their problems with security and stuff like that, and they know it's been hurting them when it comes to people evaluating their operating system and possibly switching to an alternative one. Basically, there's a conference that had Steve Ballmer, and he was talking about the company's efforts to secure its software and fend off open source rivals. And basically, through a few things, this is kind of what he had to say. I'm going to read some direct quotes. And this is kind of also explains why Microsoft just doesn't get it. They just don't understand what open source is all about. Ballmer asks, should there be a reason to believe that code that comes from a variety of people around the world would be higher quality than the people who do it professionally? Why, it is a pedigree better than code done in a controlled fashion. I don't get that. There's no roadmap for Linux. Nobody has Nobody has his rear on the line. We think it's an advantage of a commercial company that can bring. We can provide a roadmap, indemnify customers. I didn't notice that until now. That's got to do with the SCO case. identify customers. They know where to send email. None of that is true in the other world. So far, I think our model works pretty well.
For consumers, or their idea of a consumer.
Well, just let me break and say something about that. I know where to send email. They got whole freaking mailing lists for software in the open source community. Roadmap, don't you think they're collaborating with the other programmers so they don't code the same thing twice? Come on. You don't think that this kind of operating system gets built off of not having a roadmap?
Even if there are, you know, different programmers programming the same thing, the one that is the easiest, the most efficient, is the one that's going to prevail.
Yeah.
And then that becomes the roadmap, what people need, you know, needs are, what's being programmed, and what has the most, what programs have the most fitness is going to be the future.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the market or whatever has totally decided on the evolution of the software. And also, you know, where it says nobody has their rear end on the line. Basically, you can get fired if your software sucks. Well, the good thing about software that sucks is you know not what to code because it sucks. And another thing about that is that, well, in the open source community, it's your reputation that's on the line. And that's worse than having your job because you can go to just another company and say you did a good old job at the last company. No. People know your name if you're a developer for open source, and they're definitely going to include you in their projects if they've seen that you've done good work in the past. At the core of Ballmer's remarks is a fundamental misunderstanding not only of open source, but of software development as an art rather than as a business. Cutting to the bone of his remarks, he's saying that Microsoft developers, since they are employees, are more skilled and dedicated than open source developers. They are better, Ballmer suggests, because Microsoft developers have their ears. Why do I keep saying ears? It's rears. That's something with my vision of how I see that word.
It's kind of like a donkey or something like that that has big ears.
I have an ear fetish.
Okay.
Now, presumably their job's on the line. All those lines and all those rears are a part of a roadmap, he says, and because of that roadmap, the 30 billion plus Microsoft gets each year isn't too much for us to pay, so the model works pretty well. This is nonsense. It's nonsense because Steve Ballmer, like Bill Gates before him, confuses market success with technical merit. Microsoft product roadmap is a manifestation of a business plan, and what matters in Redmond is the plan, not the map, which is in constant flux. How many technical initiatives have Microsoft announced with fanfare and industry partners yet never delivered? Dozens. That is no roadmap. And Linus attributes the high quality of Linux, it is very stable, certainly compared to Windows, to the very grassroots development effort that Ballmer criticizes and doesn't understand. This would seem to contradict the idea many people have that it takes a big buck development operation to create great software. Just the opposite, says Linus, who claims that free software is nearly always better. Huh? It's very simple, said Linus, because the software is free, and there's no pressure to release it before it's really ready to achieve some sales target. Every version of Linux is declared to be finished only when it's actually finished, which explains why it is so solid. The other reason why free software is better is because the personal reputation of the developer is attached to every release. If you are making something to give away to the world, something that represents to millions of users your philosophy of computing, you will always make it the very best product you can make. That's why Linux is a success. So,
these are the same people who had a roadmap that was going to push MSN in lieu of the internet, right?
Say that again?
I remember in the mid-1990s, Microsoft was stating its market position, saying they were going to develop the Microsoft network as opposed to pushing the internet. I mean, remember they got left behind on the whole browser thing. These guys want one hell of a map, don't they?
Yeah. You know, are you talking about developing a portal service like AOL
something?
Well,
yeah. That was back when I think you had all these, isolated networks back in the days of AOL and CompuServe. Right around the time that Mosaic was hitting the scene, MSN made this big hoo-boo about how they're going to develop the Microsoft network, and they actually poo-pooed the World Wide Web.
You know, I think, you know, I've heard constantly ideas of Microsoft come up, but it seems like they've tried everything that was a big moneymaker. Oh, you're making money on that? All right, we're going to try it. Or we're going to buy it from you. or we're going to buy it from you and never try it again. We're going to just take it out of the market, make it disappear. You know, of course, when you have that kind of cash flow, you can do and do whatever you want, make lots of bad decisions. So the fact that they've got $30 billion paid programmers with their rears on the line and still have incredibly buggy, bad software, I mean, that answers it right there. Obviously, these tree-hugger hippies that code Linux, obviously, is what's in their minds, are doing a hell of a lot better job. So, you know, honestly, it takes somebody's real, you know, it takes real perseverance, it takes real care and want to develop a piece of software or your own project in general. It's not like they do it because they get money. It's not like they do it because they can go brag to their friends. Well, they can if they want to, if it's really good. I mean, that'd be a good thing, right? But you can't brag to your friends about crappy software or some sort of project you work on. So obviously, anything that's put forth is going to have a lot of thought into it, because you're going to realize, you know, if I'm doing this and it's not, I'm not good enough at it, or it's just a crappy piece of software, why am I going to do it in the first place? And a lot of things, too, with open source is that a lot of people have been able to fill niche areas to where, like, hey, I got this need, I want to fill it. And a lot of people will show up out of the blue saying, oh, my goodness, somebody filled that need? I have the same freaking need. And, you know, they get really excited about that. It's that community, you know. It's something that's there for you, and actually you feel quite pleased contributing to it and adding your thoughts. It's a great thing.
Yeah, but you're really getting down to the really good point that most of it's all created for the individual who programmed it or wrote it.
Yeah.
Is so they want to, you know, they deal with it on a regular minute-to-minute or at least a daily basis. And so they're going to create something which they can live with, you know, that...
Yeah, and it provides everybody the opportunity, if they want to jump on this system and make something. And a lot of people have done that, and a lot of people have benefited that didn't code it. You know, they benefited because, like, hey, somebody filled that need. Somebody has that available. And it's amazing. I mean, you'll find stuff you didn't know that there was software for, you know, and you're like, wow, that's really cool. I never even thought of, you know, it's like the Mac people back in there really appreciating what
shareware.
Mac did. Well, yeah. But appreciating what the Mac did as far as, like, graphics and color and things like that, and being able to be, you know, their whole selling point for Apple was being creative. And it was creative in a graphical manner. Well, this is, creative in a...
And that was a market that didn't exist. I mean, that's the funny thing about Microsoft is they always come to a market late in the game. You know, they've never invented anything. They always are a me-too company. And the only reason they got so many licenses out there is back in the day they used to bundle it with all this hardware. And they have a lot of entrenched user base where people have to use their product, not because they want to, because their boss makes them use it. Whereas most Linux users are people who do it out of enthusiasm as opposed to doing it because that's what they make them use at work.
Yeah, definitely. You know, here's something that I read that that Microsoft did create. Maybe they bought it from somebody else. I have no idea. But in their Outlook 2003, they're going to have the ability, maybe this is a good thing, maybe it isn't, but let's just say you forward an email to someone. Well, that person can accept that forwarded email, but it's got permissions on that email, so you can't send it to anybody else. Or it self-destructs after a certain amount of time.
I'll just take a screen snapshot and make an attachment.
Great.
I mean...
So, well, no more of this, like, you know, getting forwarded email that's been forwarded 400 times.
Well, those emails are typically allowed to be forwarded 400 times, so I don't think they'll put restrictions on that.
But that's how I find stuff out, is when some idiot keeps forwarding something that I'm not supposed to see, and this is the thread at the very bottom of the email. I'll never find these things out now.
Yeah. It's supposed to, stop spam a little bit better with, you know, it's got a built-in blacklist abilities, and it also, if you don't, let's just say you get one of these weird emails, right, and your software won't be able to read it. You can download a free version of their reader software to be able to, you know, read these emails with these, you know, these features on it. Otherwise, you won't be able to read it.
BS.
Yeah, but see, here's the catch, right? We got all excited that, hey, that, you know, that might be able to use that feature. Yet again, it's not going to be open sourced. There's not going to be an RFC per se of how this system works, and somebody's going to have to reverse engineer it, make their own client. You know, otherwise, they're going to try to tie you back in. Like, you know, this is a cool feature, but you need Office to do it, or you need Outlook to do it. So
I still have to wonder how many suits got backed into a corner and made to look like the idiots that they are because somebody was able to forward a piece of email that proved them right.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, yeah, there's definitely a lot of interesting things going out there. Well, we're going to be getting to our SCO section, and I think we're just about to let it begin. That's right. That's right. This is the In the Now SCO section, and we're happy to bring it to you. Wait, hold on. Got a wash up there. All right. thank you for the articles meme. She just grabbed those for me out of our SCO closet. Basically, SCO was trying to tell us that the GPL is not enforceable. It's not enforceable.
Can I flush again?
I don't understand how it could not be enforceable.
Hey, Bob, I'm going to give you $5. And if you could go down the store and get me a drink, and you can keep two of those dollars. Would you do that for me, please?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, see, that what we just did? We just did a verbal contract, okay? That's nothing that was on a piece of paper, anything like that. If he went down and he just took my $5 and ran away, I could actually sue him. I could actually take him to court and say, hey, I've got a verbal contract. And let's just say I recorded it. I recorded it. They took it. They verified the voices are, you know, me and Bob. And they're going to say, Bob, you got to give that $5 back. So you violated that. Now, this is something that's written down, and it's posted all over the software within the code, and it's got very clear guidelines of how it's supposed to work and what it does do and what it doesn't do. And SCO released their software, Linux, GNU Linux software, under the GPL license, GNU license. And now they're trying to say that, well, we made that mistake, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because it's not enforceable. Well, it does matter because they just did it. I mean, they did it and it's done. So it just goes along with some of the games that we've been talking about. I don't know if we've talked about this before, but it's getting down to the court case. You're finding out, you know, what are the details that are being hampered on. One of them is IBM, of course, is going to go and say, hey, you guys released it under the GPL, so you're going to come and tell me that I did something wrong, you know? You made that code available to us by doing it that way. Another thing that SCO is doing... By the way, do we need any more toilet paper in there, or are we all out?
We're out of tickets, man.
All right. Well, we're going to have to pick up some more. Another thing is that SCO told IBM, no, you show your code first. Because basically, IBM and Red Hat have come down to the ends. They're saying, look, we're done with the crap. We're done with the charades. You've made all your stances that you're going to make in this case. So now it's time to come clean. And they have sent letters. They have sent discovery papers saying, like, look, we need to see this kind of stuff for our discovery process. So we're able to take it to trial. SCO saying no. It says specifically right here, how are we supposed to know what code IBM has appropriated? I hope you know. You're the one that started the case.
Isn't the particular code in question in the Linux kernel?
Yeah, it's in the Linux kernel.
And every Linux kernel is open source, and you can go download the source for any Linux kernel.
Yes.
And they're still asking IBM to give them the source code.
Yeah, it says it's up to them to prove our case for us. It's not for us to hand over the code. It's up to them to show us every bit of the code they donated to Linux. They're like, we don't
guilty
have
guilty until proven innocent, baby.
Yeah, they're like, look, we don't have any code, bro, and we need you to, like, maybe give us something so we can try to figure out who submitted it and who to blame.
Hey, Slip, I just gave you $200, and you have to give it back unless you can prove I didn't give it to you.
Yeah, huh? I don't think I have any proof. If forced, I may have to give you $200. That would really suck for me.
Who
needs conspiracy theories when you have SCO?
Yeah. Yeah. So, basically, that's a bunch of crap. You know, some more crap that's going on that they're doing, even more crap, is what they're doing is that their licensing scheme that they're doing, they're only going after the Fortune 1000 companies. Why are they doing that? Because they don't have enough staff to accommodate everybody. So they're going after the people that have the most money. That's why they attacked IBM. And because they're getting, money
side
on the table from Microsoft, but...
They're not as dumb as the RIAA, you know, suing people who live in housing projects.
You know what? but it's they're a little bit smarter than the RIAA. Well, see, the RIAA's target, their problem, is the people in the homes, you know.
The RIAA isn't after the money. They are, but they're not. They're basically out to scare everybody into stop downloading music.
Yeah.
But people who download music who wouldn't buy it otherwise, I call that advertising.
Yeah,
I call
exactly.
that exposure.
But they don't realize that.
No, they're stupid.
Exactly.
You know, there's so many products out there for file sharing anyways. You know, thumb drives, CD-ROMs, zip drives, you know, just even portable MP3 playing devices and Palm Pilots and PDAs and tablet PCs and laptops and the
and
internet.
Tape recorders.
And freaking tape recorders of all things. Are, you know, why it's they made it so easy for us to be able to do it. I mean, I remember when CDs first came out, they said, oh, we're worried that you're going to copy software. I mean, that was said, you know, back in the early 90s. You know, it's just something you can't get away from. So they're trying to do their scare tactics. It's so built into our everyday systems. It, at a touch away, a few clicks or a few moments of using a simple device, we could easily take something and transfer it. So the only way they're going to win is to, you know, get some money out of it is to, you know, continue doing these internet things where you download songs and stuff like that. And it, maybe, it'll make the artists make better freaking music. Because if we download one of their songs and it sucks, if we download one of the songs that's not on their music video, you know, one of the other songs, test one of the random ones out that aren't out on the streets, you know, and that song really sucks, you might be like, this is probably a good testament that this, you know, or let's say three, because everyone should be entitled to having one sucky song on their album. But let's just say you download a few of them and you think it really sucks and you don't, you know, waste your money on the other seven songs. Maybe they're going to have to think about making some better music.
Or for that matter, I mean, why do we have a certain number of songs on an album? Oh, it's because of the playtime of the medium. Well, we're not bound by that no more. Why are we stuck on this old, you know, way of thinking that, oh, there's got to be 10 songs, 8
yeah.
songs, or
well,
whatever.
You have double albums, stuff like that. Of course, you pay twice, you know, because you have two CDs in there that are 5 cents a piece.
There's
so
also
now it's 10 cents, you know.
You don't need filler anymore, you know, when it's a set format, you know. Like
there's also a new thing
anymore.
That came out a couple months ago, DVD CDs. There's not very many DVD CD players out there, but it's really high quality audio. But it's just the same amount of audio. It's just much higher quality.
Huh.
They don't put any more on that.
Well, they don't get it. That's why.
Exactly. I guess they think it takes a lot of work to make all that music, and they can't generate. Like, they can't charge you $50 for a CD because nobody's going to pay that.
Well, unless it's like the Beatles, which I might pay $50 for if it's like three CDs or something.
Well, yeah.
But yeah. You know, it's I don't know. It's just it's all going to change, man. It's all changing already. It's already in the process. Everybody's rethinking everything. Everyone's moving their business to the internet. They no longer want you to go to their office. They don't want to contact you. They don't want to even give you a freaking phone number. They got an email. They might answer it within 24 hours, and that's about it. Meanwhile, they want to track you, watch you, market you, RFID you. And
but you hone your social engineering skills by trying to get someone's phone number, though.
Yeah. And whenever I'm register software, who am I? Am I John Jenkins, something like that? I don't know. I like sticking with the Jenkins, a little bit of John, maybe Frank Schneider, something like that. Get excited about using
more bucks.
Yeah. You know, I'm a CEO of some company that does tectonics in Africa. In some things, so I don't know. And of course, my phone number is always 555-5555.
Mine is 666-6666.
Oh, you know what? Mine is 666-6969. Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's
what it
big
is.
Difference there.
So, yeah. Wow, we came pretty clean once again on the show, laying it out. You know, but it's not all that bad. See, what you got to do is you got to know what is bad first in order to know what's good, really.
Well, and then if you don't know what's bad, then try to think of something that's worse.
Or not so bad.
Right, and then you can juxtapose the two, and then you can figure out something else.
But then there's nothing so bad as something not so bad. Or something.
That was pretty bad.
I'm lost.
But...
That was a Scarlet Pimpernel. I stole that.
So, you know, but, you know, I guess I was trying, this is a weird thing. Every show, I try to feel, you know, I don't feel so refreshed telling all this stuff because it really sucks sometimes, you know. A lot of times it doesn't suck because it's informative, so it's cool, you know. But
we should try to do a Nothing Sucks show, but we wouldn't have any news to read.
Yeah. You can always talk about something, that's for sure. You can always, you know, find something in something.
Let's talk about light-speed processors.
Light-speed processors.
We should do a delusional show where we just, like, talk about how things could be.
Or how great things really are.
Or how they could have been or something.
Yeah. Well,
that could be a really interesting little mental and emotional exercise.
Well, you know, we could do, you know, it require you guys to actually do something. No, I'm just joking. I'm just joking. No, we could do, you know, we could take some information and find out.
We should do a phone call on the show.
You know, I want to do, I've been trying to figure out how I can pipe Lynn phone into my mixer here, and I think I can, you know, just doing it over the internet.
Yeah.
Software called Lynn phone. You know, but they have, I think we should do something where we find stuff that's really cool, and we'll just talk about it on the next show.
Maybe a field trip.
Well, I could totally do a field trip. Like I said, I haven't tested it out, but I could probably hook all this stuff. You know, like we're actually a band, you know, and we're like bringing all of our equipment. Hook all this stuff up to my laptop and record on that.
Go tailgate.
Yeah, go tailgate.
Tailgating.
So
I've always wanted to say that. Let's go tailgate.
Let's go party, man. Okay, well, I think that we're going to work on that idea. We're going to see what we can pull off there. And I don't have anything else to say. If anybody else has anything else to say, putting you on the spot now.
We could do candid camera retail, you know, tech retail, candid camera.
Tech retail, candid camera?
Think about it.
Yeah, we'll have to think about that.
I think I'm going to stick with the audio, though.
Like stupid tech support tricks, that sort of thing.
Oh, man. It would be the Saturday Night Live in the Now show, you know?
Yeah, it'd be kind of like, you know, the Beastie Boys meet the techies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the jerky boys.
The Three Dead Trolls and a...
We could do a reality
show. That's exactly what Three Dead Trolls and a Paggy is. Jerky Boys meets tech support.
Five geeks in a flat. You know, it'd be the new reality show where you get a bunch of geeks, you know, and they're all on disparate platforms and put them all in the same place. You know?
Now that
would be a holy
war.
That's
technology drama right there.
Doesn't it sound like those guys that committed suicide back in 1997 or whatever? The
Heaven's Gate
like
people?
The whole
they
group
all get
of
together.
Website developers?
Oh, yeah, the first person who gets kicked out is the girl that used Windows ME, you know.
They found out that IE was taking over Netscape and they all committed suicide. All right. Well, I don't have anything else to say if anybody else does. But doesn't sound like it. All right. Had plenty to say already. Well, hey, I'm going to encourage everyone to check out the forums, of course, and post there. Getting a little bit more traffic more and more as time goes by. And also, I did finish that IP tables document that I said I was going to do for BitRev. I'm submitting it tonight. It's a lot of work. And the scripts for it are actually going to be available on my website eventually. You'll see when the article comes out, so you don't have to write them yourself. You can just go download them. All right. Well, that is the November 2nd edition of the In the Now show. And this is Slip Mode signing out once again.
This is VR. Later.
This is Bob. Bye. Meme, fight the info war.
Fight the info war. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Alright, you are a ghost.